They had all, the people of Laban, washed their heads and limbs in the water of the blessed pond, had anointed and curled themselves to their taste, put on their festal garments, and burned much fragrant oil, to receive the incoming guests with a sweet savor. And they came, on foot, on the backs of asses, in carts drawn by bullocks and mules, men alone, men with women, even with children, if they could not be left at home, the peasants and cattle breeders of the neighborhood, likewise anointed and curled and clad in festal garments, people like Laban, of the same heavy-handed tribe, with the same prosaic habits of thought. They saluted hand to forehead, made inquiry into the health of all and sundry, and then settled down in house and court, round cook-pots and shaded tables. Water having been poured over their hands and feet, they smacked their lips and fell to upon the lengthy meal, amid loud invocations in praise of Shamash and of Laban, father of the bride and giver of the feast. The banquet was laid in the outer court of the steading, between the storehouses, as well as in the inner court, round the altar, on the roof of the house, and in the wooden galleries. And round the altar were grouped the musicians hired from Haran. They played on harps, drums, and cymbals, and likewise danced. The day was windy, the evening still more so. Clouds glided across the moon, hiding her altogether from time to time, a bad omen to many of those present, though they did not expressly say so. They were simple folk, and made no distinction between complete darkening and a cloud passing over her face. A sultry wind went sighing through the steading, got caught in the chimney of the storehouses, made the tall poplars creak and groan, and, whirling among the savors of the feast, the odors of the anointed guests, and the fumes of the cookery, mingled them all together in gusts of vapor, and seemed to try to snatch the flames from the tripods where nard grass and budulu gum were burning. Jacob, when he recalled his wedding day, always recognized in his nostrils that wind-driven mingling of spices and sweat and roasted meats. He sat with the family among the feasting guests in the upper room, where 7 years before he had first broken bread with his stranger kin. Sat with the master, his fruitful wife, and their daughters, at a table heaped up with dessert and dainties of various sorts, sweetbreads and dates, cucumbers and garlic, and pledged the guests who lifted their glasses to him and Laban. Rachel, his bride, whom soon he should receive for his own, sat beside him, and he kissed from time to time the seam of her veil that enveloped her in its heavy picture folds. She did not lift it to eat or drink. It seemed the consecrated one's hunger had been satisfied earlier. She sat quiet and silent, only bending meekly her shrouded head when he kissed her veil. Jacob, too, sat silent and dreamy, with a flower in his hand, a blossoming twig of myrtle from Laban's well-watered garden. He had drunk beer and date wine, and his senses were somewhat clouded. His soul could neither free itself for thought nor rouse itself to observation, but was heavy inside his anointed body, and his body was his soul. Gladly would he have thought, gladly comprehended how his God had brought all this to pass, how he had brought the beloved in the way of the fugitive, the human creature whom he had but needed to behold, for his heart to elect her and love her for all time and eternity, beyond itself, and in the children whom his love would beget. He tried to rejoice in his victory over time, that hard time of waiting laid upon him, it seemed, in penance for Esau's undoing and his bitter weeping, to lay it at the feet of God the Lord in thanks and praise, this triumph, for that it was his. God, through him and his not unachieving patience, having enforced the time, that seven-headed monster, as once the dragon of chaos, so that what had been but inward wish and waiting was now the present, and Rachel sat beside him in the veil, which, in a little while, he would be permitted to lift. He tried to partake of this joy in his soul, but with joy it is as with the waiting for it. The longer one waits, the less it is pure joy, the more it is filled with practical activities and living needs. And when it comes, that joy so actively awaited, it is not of the stuff of the divine, but has become bodily present and has material weight, like all life. for the life of the body is never pure bliss, but a mixture, in part unpleasant. And if joy becomes the life of the body, the soul does also, and is no longer anything else but the body, with the oil-soaked pores, whose affair that once distant bliss has now become. Jacob sat and spanned his thighs, and thought of his sex, whose property this joy had now become, and which very soon might and must approve itself mightily in the holy darkness of the nuptial chamber. For his joy was marriage joy, and a feast of Ishtar. It was celebrated with overeating and drunkenness, wreathed about with the odors of spices, whereas once it had been God's affair, and rested in his hand. And as once Jacob had been pained over the waiting, and forced to forget it in life and action, so now he was pained for the sake of God, who was the Lord of life and all the longed-for future. Yet when the hour came to pass, must yield his dominion to the special idols of the physical, in whose sign it stood. And therefore Jacob kissed the little nude figure of Ishtar, lifting the hem of Rachel's veil as she sat beside him, immaculate sacrifice to procreation. Laban sat opposite, leaning forward with his heavy arm on the table, and looking steadfastly at his son-in-law. "Rejoice, my son, and my sister's son, for thy hour is at hand, and the day of rewarding. And thou shalt be paid the reward according to law and contract for the 7 years that thou hast labored for my house and my business to the reasonable satisfaction of its head. And the reward is neither goods nor gold, but a tender maiden, my daughter, whom thy heart desireth, and thou shalt have her after thy heart's desire, and she shall be submissive to thee in thy arms. I marvel how thy heart may be beating, for the hour is big for thee. Truly, an hour of life like to be thy greatest hour, great as the hour when in thy father's tent thou wonnest the blessing, as thou hast told me, thou crafty one, and son of a crafty woman." Jacob did not hear, but Laban mocked at him with gross words before the guests. "Tell me then, son-in-law, hear me, and answer, how dost feel? Dost thou quake before the bliss of embracing thy bride? Dost thou not fear, as once in that matter of the blessing, when thou wentest in to thy father with thy knees shaking? Didst thou not say the sweat ran down thy thighs for dread, and thy voice stuck in thy throat, even when thou wouldst win the blessing away from Esau the accursed? Thou happy man, pray that joy take not away thy manliness in the moment when thou needest it most, else the bride might take it ill." They all roared with laughter in the upper room, and once more Jacob smiled and kissed the picture of Ishtar, to whom God had given the hour. But Laban got heavily to his feet, swaying somewhat, and said, "Come then, for it is midnight. Come up to me, and I will put you together." The crowd pressed close to see Jacob and Rachel kneel down on the paved floor before the bride's father, and to hear how Jacob answered to the questions according to custom. For Laban asked him whether this woman should be his wedded wife, and he her husband, and if he willed to give her the flower, to which he answered, yes. Asked whether he was well born, whether he would make rich this woman and fruitful her womb, Jacob answered that he was the son of the great, and would fill her lap with silver and gold, and make fruitful this woman like the fruit of the garden. Then Laban touched both their foreheads, and stepped between them, and laid his hands upon them. Then he told them to stand up and embrace each other, and that then they were wed. And he led the dedicated one back to her mother, but the nephew he took by the hand, and led him in front of the guests, who crowded after, beginning to sing. They passed down the brick staircase into the paved court, and the musicians left their stand and walked before them. Next came boys with torches, and after them children in short smocks with censers hanging between chains. Jacob, led by Laban, walked in the sweet-smelling cloud, with the white blossoming myrtle twig in his right hand. He did not join in the traditional songs that swelled up as they marched, and only hummed a little when Laban nudged him and told him to open his mouth. But Laban sang in a heavy bass, and knew all the songs by heart. They were sentimental and amorous ditties about loving couples in general, on the verge of their nuptials, and how on both sides they can scarcely wait. They told of the procession, coming out of the wilderness like pillars of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, and of the bridegroom walking with the crown wherewith his mother crowned him on the day of his espousals. All this was about the procession in which they were actually moving, but the allusions did not fit Jacob. His mother was far away. He was a fugitive, and he was not leading his beloved into his mother's house and into the chamber of her who had borne him. Just for that reason, it seemed, Laban sang the more lustily, honoring the pattern in the face of all present lacks, that Jacob might feel how different it was. And then the bridegroom spoke in the song, and the bride gave ardent answer, and they sang in turn long, rapturous speeches of mutual praise and longing. Their bed was freshly prepared in the paneled chamber. They pointed one another the way thither, promising the greatest pleasure in the union of their nard-scented loveliness. For his left hand would be under her head, and his right hand embrace her, and sweeter than wine from the hills would be their mutual love. Thus they told one another in song, each painting in intoxicated language the other's loveliness. And finally they charged the company to stir not up, nor awake from voluptuous slumber either bride or bridegroom until they pleased. They implored the people in song by the rose and by the hinds of the field. And the company took up the words as they paced, and sang them with great heartiness. Even the incense-bearing boys sang lustily, if without precise understanding. And so they marched, in the windy, moon-darkened night, round Laban's steading, once and twice, and came before the house, and before the house-door of palm wood, and Laban pressed through, with the musicians in the lead, and came to the bedchamber on the ground floor, that likewise had a door, and Laban led in Jacob by the hand. He made light with the torches, that Jacob might see into the room and make out the position of table and bed. Then he wished him blessings on his manhood, and turned back to the company that crowded about the doorway. They went away, singing as they went, and Jacob was alone. After long decades, and in his great age, and even on his dying bed, where he still spoke solemnly of it, Jacob remembered not more clearly than how he had stood alone in the darkness of the bridal chamber, where it blew and was draughty, for the night wind burst through the window openings under the roof and out again through the openings on the side toward the court, getting caught in the carpets and hangings with which, as Jacob had seen by the torchlight, they had adorned the walls, and making a great flapping and clapping. It was the room above the archive and grave chamber, with the teraphim and the receipts. Jacob could feel through the thin carpet they had put down the ring of the little trap-door by which one went down. And he had seen the bed, and he went towards it with his hands out. It was the best bed in the house, one of three. Laban and Adonah had sat on it at that first meal 7 years ago. A sofa on metal-covered feet, with a round headrest of polished bronze. They had put covers on the wooden frame with linen over them. Jacob could feel it, and there were pillows against the headrest. But it was a narrow bed. On the table beside it stood beer and a little food. There were two tabourets in the room, also covered with stuff, and lampstands at the bed's head. But there was no oil in the lamps. Jacob tried the lamps and discovered their emptiness, as he stood in the wind and the darkness, while the train was fetching the bride and filling house and court with the noise of their singing and the trampling of their feet. He sat down on the bed and listened, the flower in his hand. The procession was leaving the house again, with the harps and cymbals at its head, bringing Rachel, his beloved, to whom all his heart belonged, and she walked there in her veil. Laban led her by the hand as he had done Jacob. Perhaps Adonah was there too. And the music of the wedding songs rose and died away. At last he heard the words, "My beloved is mine, he is altogether mine. I am a garden enclosed, full of pleasant fruits and full of the odors of the finest spices. Come, O beloved, into thy garden. Eat of thy pleasant fruits. Take unto thee the refreshment of their juices. The feet of those who sang were before the door, and the door opened a little, so that snatches of the song and the music came through, and then the veiled one was in the room, ushered by Laban, who closed the door quickly, and they were alone in the darkness. "Is it thou, Rachel?" Jacob asked after a little while, during which he had waited for those outside to move away from the door. He asks, as one says, "Have you returned from your journey?" when the traveller stands there in the flesh, and it cannot be otherwise than that he has returned, so that the question is nonsense. Only ask that the voice may be heard, and the traveller does not answer, but can only laugh. But Jacob heard that she bent her head. He knew it from the faint rustling and rattling of the light, heavy veil. "Thou beloved, little one, my dove and apple of my eye, heart of my heart," he said fervently, "it is so dark, and bloweth. I am sitting here upon the bed, if thou hast not seen it, straight into the room, and then somewhat to the right. Come then, but strike not against the table, else a bruise will come upon thy tender skin, and also thou wouldst knock over the beer. I am not thirsty for beer, I am only thirsty for thee, my pomegranate. How good that they have brought thee to me, and that I sit here no longer alone in the wind. Comest thou now? Gladly would I come to meet thee, but that probably I may not, for it is by law and custom that I hand thee the flower while sitting. And though no one seeth us, yet we will hold to that which is prescribed, that we may be well and truly wedded, as we have steadfastly desired through so many years of waiting." The thought overcame him. His voice broke. Memories of the time when in patience and in impatience he had arisen for the sake of this hour laid hold on him mightily and moved him to the depths. And the thought that she had waited with him, and now on her side saw herself at the goal of her desires, stirred the tenderest emotions of his heart. Such is love when it is complete, feeling and lust together, tenderness and desire. And while feeling made the tears gush out of Jacob's eyes, at the same time he felt the tension of his manhood. "Here art thou," he said. "Thou hast found me in the darkness, as I found thee after more than 17 days' journey, and thou camest on among the sheep and spoke, 'Behold, a stranger.' Then we chose each other among men, and I have served for thee 7 years, and the time lies at our feet. My doe and my dove, here is the flower. Thou seest it and findest it not, and therefore I will guide thy hand to the twig, that thou mayest take it, and I give it to thee, and thus we are one. But thy hand I keep, since I so love it. And I love the bones of thy wrist, so well known unto me that I know it again in the darkness. And thy hand is to me like thyself, and like thy whole body. But that is like to a sheaf of wheat garlanded with roses. My sister, my love, let thyself down to me, and sit by my side, and I will move, that there may be space for two, and would be for three, if needful. Yet how good is God that he lets us be two alone together, thee by me, and me by thee. For I love only thee, for the sake of thy face that I cannot now see, but saw 1,000 times and kissed for very love. For it is thy loveliness that crowns thy body as with roses. And when I think that thou art Rachel, with whom I have often been, yet never thus, and who waited for me, and likewise now waiteth for me, and upon my tenderness, then a bliss cometh upon me, stronger than I am, so that it overcometh me.